Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 22nd December. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and recorded from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. We're recording the shows up until the 24th, back live on the 10th. This show recorded Tuesday, 14 December. We're going to be chatting with Chantal Marks and then Narina Fisser from ETFSA.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chantal Marks, Head of Research at FNB. Chantal, appreciate the early morning today and for the whole year we've been chatting early mornings. 2021, I mean, chatting with a bunch of market commentators, it's been a good year for investors. Whether you were passive, whether you were active, the portfolios certainly are looking really, really green at this point in the year. What was one of your top moments, top stocks from the past year?
Oh, goodness. Preparing for this specific show, I actually had a look at the best local and international stocks for the year. And I wouldn't have picked any of them at the start of the year, to be honest. ArcelorMittal, best performing stock on the JSE, up 750%. Sometimes a stock can become too cheap. But, I mean, buyer beware. When you look at these cheap stocks, they may as well go in a completely different direction, as we saw with the likes of Tongaat as well. And then internationally, what really stood out to me was the big recovery in Ford. A Ford Motor Company up 143% this year. And then also the luxury goods stocks performing particularly well. And it just seems as if the wealthy are not really feeling the impact of those COVID-19 restrictions that we saw in 2020 and for a large part of 2021.
Yeah, I have to say that the luxury was what caught me very much by surprise. I mean, I appreciate the rich are a whole different game entirely, but I didn't expect them to be out there shopping quite as they patently were. And I mean, Richemont has been a star performer, and ArcelorMittal would have passed me by absolutely in my sleep, but so did that Richemont and even the offshore luxury stocks.
Yes, so Richemont was the second best performing luxury stock globally, with Hermès or Hermes or however you want to pronounce it, performing best. So they basically do scarves and handbags, and with scarves and handbags, an 80% return in dollar terms. I mean, that is just absolutely phenomenal. And as I mentioned, those automakers also passed me by completely. But it does seem as if the initial sell down in both the automakers as well as the luxury goods stocks were a little bit overdone. I think that the expectation was that the global recovery was going to take a lot longer than it did. And I think that's what's reflected in these share prices these share price returns that we saw. And as I looked back at what we were saying at the start of 2021, we expected a strong growth rebound, but it's exceeded even our most bullish expectations. And that's true internationally as well as locally, with the only disappointments, I think, being China and that being completely self-inflicted with that regulatory clampdown.
Yeah, China stomping over everyone. And maybe that's the next question. Yeah, surprises. This was a year, you know, stock markets mostly did really, really excellent. But it was we've had the new variant in the last couple of weeks. We had the riots in July. We had China stomping down on everyone. We had Suez canals being closed for a week way back in, I think it was April or there's about. I mean, what was a highlight surprise from you as we look back at it? Notwithstanding, I mean, ArcelorMittal and Richemont were two already.
Yeah, so I think MTN was also a big surprise to me. I think that the recovery that we saw there and just the execution from that management team was a big standout surprise. I mean, we've always liked Vodacom just because it's, you know, you know what you're getting. Some call it boring, others call it dependable. But I really do think that what MTN managed to do this year was really a standout for me. And then the other thing that really stood out for me, and you saw that in some of these share price returns as well, was the global chip shortage and the massive impact that had on almost every single industry. I mean, I am still on a waiting list for an iPhone. this is now probably in the third month. I'm working with a cracked screen. Apart from that, we've seen the used car market in South Africa absolutely booming.
Yeah.
Not because it's a bargain, but because there simply aren't new vehicles available. So that chip shortage also resulted in some of these chip makers doing particularly well. NVIDIA probably standing out as the pick of the bunch. So yeah, a lot to take away. It's very difficult to just zone in on one single thing. But I guess when you look at the best performers locally, the best performers internationally, the worst performers locally, and the worst performers internationally, what stands out in that worst international category really is the Chinese equity market. It's been a massive disappointment. And I'd say out of all of it, that would probably be my standout story for 2021.
I want to come to China in a moment, but you mentioned MTN, Vodacom. Vodacom did some more interesting deals, most notably with Egypt. And that it kind of changes their profile a bit. It doesn't put them into the risky category like MTN does, considering some of the markets they operate in. But it does give them a giant market, a giant unbanked market. And of course, banking is becoming important for them. It kind of changes the profile and perhaps makes Vodacom a little more exciting.
Absolutely. And the share price has almost not reacted to that changing growth profile. I think that it's really one of my top picks for 2022. If you look at the Egyptian mobile phone market or mobile telecommunications market, there's still a lot to come within that space. And that's kind of the big deal that's going to come through in 2022. If you look at what Safaricom also did for their growth profile, it really just gave them a step up. And I think that this is probably going to be a further step up. I think there's a little bit of execution risk in the Ethiopian side of things, just because we do have a very volatile geopolitical and political situation in that country at the moment. But I think much longer term, that could even be a bigger growth step up for them relative to an Egypt, although Egypt will certainly help. And I think that deal that they also did with Remgro was very interesting.
Yeah.
A consolidation of fiber assets in South Africa, I think, is a really good and very strong move. And hopefully it will lead to even faster and more widespread broadband access, which could even translate into a step up in growth for the South African economy, hopefully.
Yeah, that dark fiber Africa deal. China was certainly them stomping all over markets and Xi Jinping waking up on a Sunday morning and decreeing all sorts of things. Is that opportunity or should we remain cautious?
Oh, I absolutely think it's an opportunity. It was an opportunity then and it is an opportunity now. I mean, there's absolutely no motivation for the Chinese government to blow up their own economy or their own tech sector. So I think that the steps that they are taking are not dissimilar to what we have seen in other markets globally over the last 50 years. They're just a little bit late in pushing through those regulatory changes that are really focused on reducing the harm that some of these business models actually inflict on societies and competition. I mean, it's really important for a well-functioning economy to have strong competitive forces and for there to not be a situation where one company runs rampantly over the entire market. A monopoly is a bad thing because it results in artificially higher prices and it penalizes the consumer. So I think that we're taking a bit of pain now, but hopefully we will see those regulatory changes actually be a force for good longer term. And as I said, no motivation for them to blow up their own tech sector. So I'm buying right now. I think some of these names really look cheap, probably Alibaba being the standout. And I see Ping An also down almost 40% this year.
Yeah.
That's the biggest healthcare insurer or insurer in China. I think that there's still a lot to come from that company as well.
Yeah. And I think no one can argue with the idea of common prosperity. It certainly, I mean, no one says that's a bad idea. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Really appreciate your time this morning and over the course of the year.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nerina Fisser. You find her, of course, at ETFSA. Nerina, appreciate the time this morning. 2021 was many things. One of them was a really good year for passive investing. I mean, tons of ETFs doing double-digit return. And in fact, when I say double-digit, I'm underselling it. Yeah, I got a list here of the top 15. And if you were 15th place, you did 27%. It really has been a stellar year.
Indeed, indeed, Simon. Good morning. Yes, and if we look at the range of those returns, you also start realizing that this idea of passive investing is so much more than just buying a top 40 ETF or S&P 500 ETF, for example. Passive investing really is a notion that I think needs to be parked along with 2021. And we really need to start thinking more in terms of index tracking investment, rules-based investment. And it's the rules that sort of make up the indices that is going to give us some sort of indication of what am I invested in? What is the basis for choosing those investments inside my index? And that will give me my best indication of what should I expect in terms of return and performance from that particular index, certainly not passive.
Yeah, I take your point in that. I mean, one of the top ones was the OneInvest S&P 500 IT ETF, which takes the S&P 500, pulls out the 70-odd tech stocks from it. Everyone loves NASDAQ. Now, NASDAQ did perfectly well as well, but I like your thinking there. It's about understanding those rules. And what we saw this year as well was a bunch of new issues and not so much in the generic space. We didn't get another S&P 500 or top 40. We got diversities. We got health. We got a global from Core Shares. The market is growing and it's growing. It's kind of niche, but it's not. I mean, a healthcare ETF is not niche by any stretch. It's a good chunky sector.
Absolutely. And for me, that is one of the standout features of 2021 is these interesting new investment opportunities that we got via an ETF, an investment instrument that we've become very familiar with over the 21 years that we've had ETFs in South Africa. So yes, you're absolutely right. I think one of the key words in this industry over the last year has been this one of thematics. And thematics I differentiate from sector-based investing. So it's interesting that you mentioned the OneInvest S&P 500 IT ETF, because for me, that is not technology as a theme, but rather just technology as a sector. So when we look at the sector classification of shares on a particular stock exchange, typically they follow either the GICS classification, that's a global industry classification standard, or the ICB, the industry classification benchmark. But the point being that a particular company gets demarcated or allocated to a particular sector. And so this particular ETF invests, as you quite rightly pointed out, the 70-odd shares in the S&P 500 that are classified within the IT sector. But here's the interesting thing, that as tech has become a lot more broad-based and gets applied across so many different industries, what people often don't realize is that actually here you are getting a very select subset of technology, the theme. Because if a company is not classified within that particular sector, think of fintech companies, for example. They could very well be in a financial sector, for example, or the healthcare, the biotechnology companies. That would be sitting in the healthcare sector. And so the list goes on. And so we've already seen in this IT sector quite a big change over the last couple of years in terms of some of those big so-called FANGs companies moving out of that IT sector, and you no longer get them in this particular ETF. And in fact, there's another new wave of these sort of reclassifications scheduled for 2022, which will see more of these names that we might have thought of as IT companies or tech companies now no longer being part of this particular index, the sector index, and therefore the ETF. So it's incredibly important for investors to understand the basis for, as I say, the rules of a particular index, what decides and who decides what goes into the index, because that's going to tell me what can I end up finding inside my ETF that tracks that index.
And you've chatted about this before in terms of doing a little bit of that work and actually going and see what the rules are and see who's in there. Because one that's missing would be, for example, Amazon, because I think it's considered the consumer stock. And
exactly.
When you think about it, okay, it's consumer stock, but really I would have thought it was a tech stock. So you've actually got to do a little bit of homework and look through into what's being held, and also to make sure you're not getting cross holdings and therefore too much concentration in perhaps a particular stock.
Absolutely. You know, and these things change. I mean, in fact, if I look at that IT sector index and ETF as it stands now, really the only two big ones in there are actually Apple and Microsoft. So you talk about Alphabet, but you also don't have Google in there, or Alphabet. You don't have Meta, you know, the old Facebook in there anymore. So a lot of names that you might expect to be there is actually no longer in that index. And unfortunately, people are still so often caught up in the idea of looking at the past performance. And we will most likely find that in 2021, top of the list is going to be exactly this OneInvest S&P 500 IT ETF. We'll see exactly where it ends up on the 31st of December, but most likely that will be. And so it's, for me, this is almost a cautionary tale to investors. Don't be blinded by that past performance. Go and understand why that performance was so good for this particular ETF. And we know Apple has just continued to shoot the lights out. Microsoft has done really well. So that would be the reason for it. You know, those two alone make up more than 40% of that ETF, despite the fact that there are 70 companies in it.
Yeah.
There's two really that have determined that. So then rather ask yourself, do I expect Apple and Microsoft to continue doing this sort of thing for me in 2022 to help me decide whether this is the right ETF for me to go into? We're focusing in a lot now on one particular ETF, but the principles apply across the board when we assess the suitability of ETFs for our investment portfolios.
You mentioned thematics earlier, and that was certainly another trend. We had some, there were ETNs from F&B, a clean energy and a global water. We've seen infrastructure. We've seen diversity one ETFs coming from Satrix. And this is really investing around a theme. I've had a friend who literally for about 15 years has said, how does she easily invest into water? And the answer has been, you don't. Well, now you do.
Yeah. Exactly. So Simon, you've really touched on what I think is the second very important theme for me of 2021, and it is the rise of these ETNs that we've seen, but ETNs that are not necessarily actively managed, because we've had those types of ETNs for quite a while, but these index tracking ETNs. And so it gives us the opportunity to actually invest in these themes, exactly as you've mentioned, the clean energy, the water and so on. But you know, UBS during the course of 2021 also issued a whole list of these index tracking ETNs over and above those sort of the expected vanilla ones, you know, the MSCI World, the S&P 500, the FTSE 100. You also have these ones that invest in things like drones and robotics or large family owned businesses, or, you know, and so the list goes on. So I think the range of what is available is exciting, but it does mean that your work is, you've got your work cut out for you to look and see. So I always start at the theme or the index or rather the trend that I want to be invested in. I then go and identify what index would give me the best coverage of that investment strategy or trend or whatever. And then I look and say what ETF or ETN is available that can offer me that. Mm. Of course, the other way around to do it is to start and say, what is the buffet of everything that is available? Understand what's underlying all of ours, and then say what's suitable. Because unfortunately, when we start at the trend or the theme or whatever, we can come up with some really amazing, weird and wonderful stuff, only to find at the end of the line, but we don't have an ETF or an ETN for that just yet. So, you know, let's park that idea for another year.
the rate we're going, it is a just yet. The other thing that happened this year, ABSA exiting ETFs, although keeping commodities and ETNs, and then more recently, Ashburton moving their ETFs across to F&B. For the holders of those, of course, and both of this will happen around sort of late first quarter, early second quarter of next year. For the ETF holder, it's going to be a name change, but beyond that, nothing else.
Yes, so certainly the Ashburton ETFs becoming F&B, it is literally just a name change. It is also a ticker change or a share code change, in other words. So, you know, if you suddenly now start seeing these things popping up in your investment account, understand you're still invested in exactly the same Ashburton Top 40 or Ashburton Mid Cap or Ashburton Global Equity 1200, but it is the name that's going to change. The Satrix-APSA transaction is quite different. This is, of course, part of the much bigger merger of Sanlam Investment Management and the APSA Investment Management. And so it does only affect around 5 billion rand worth of ETFs that APSA owns. And you're quite right, the really big part of the APSA book are those commodity ETFs. I mean, New Gold to this day still remains the largest ETF on the JSE. Not by quite the margin, I might add. You know, we've seen, we've now have got three ETFs that are over 10 billion rand in market cap. But yes, so those commodity ETFs fall outside of this. And so in this particular instance, there will be a bit more action and changes coming. There's some overlap between Satrix and APSA ETFs. There are a couple of the APSA ones which are quite unique to APSA. And so we'll have to wait and see exactly what does Satrix do with these? How do they merge? How do they change? And so on. But Simon, for me, the third sort of major feature of it, of 2021 comes down to the makeup of our industry. And for the longest time, APSA was the largest ETF issuer in South Africa, and it was courtesy of those commodity ETFs. But Satrix during 2021 decidedly moved ahead of APSA. And this is, of course, now even prior to this transaction where they will be taking over those APSA ETFs. So Satrix now very much in pole position, just around about 36 billion rand in ETFs. And then we have a new entrance in second place as well, which is Signia. Yeah. And Signia sitting somewhere around 34, 35 billion, depending sort of on where the rand is, because Signia's ETFs are still quite dominated by global ones. So when the rand is strong, Signia's book is a bit smaller, and when the rand weakens, then it boosts their assets under management. APSA now in third place, still sitting around 30 billion. So it's been interesting to see how the landscape of the competitor landscape, if I can put it that way, has also changed during 2021. So been an interesting and exciting year, and I think certainly lots more to look forward to in 2022.
I agree with you. And of course, the other big story, Helena Cronardi leaving Satrix. We chatted to her when she exited out. But we'll leave it there. Nerina Fisser, ETFSA, always appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
That's it for today. We're publishing recorded shows up to Friday, the 24th, and then we'll be back with live shows on the 10th of January. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. And thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchli, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.